get ready for it. And that's the sad thing. I mean, we've given them steamroller power, and at the end of the day, it's going to take us organizing. And I know heads are low, but now is not the time to despair. Now's the time to go, how do we stop this? How do we come together and make sure that we lessen the damage? How do we do those things? And anyway, here to talk to us a little bit about what happened last night, I've asked our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson, to come talk with us. Irwin, well, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here, Rick. Thank you.
So I guess thoughts?
Well,
that sums it
up. Yes. It's a sad and challenging day. Sad and challenging day after for working men and women in Pennsylvania and the United States. And I know that sounds counterintuitive because the Trump campaign would represent that they were put over the top by the votes in support of working men and women. And I think that to some degree, a fair and reasonable analysis of election results is capable of leading us to that conclusion. But part of this is a product of a recognition of true angst and insecurity on the part of working men and women in Pennsylvania and across the country for having been left behind in some respects. And Donald Trump tapped into that emotion, but he tapped into it at our most base and frightening level because he guided us into believing that there was someone to blame, and it looked a lot like our neighbor and our colleague and our friend and our coworker. And it looked a lot like an immigrant who was coming to the United States to seek a better life, just like our grandparents and great-grandparents did. And it looked a lot to us like somebody who may have a different gender preference than others of us do, or may have a different sexual preference than others of us do, or someone who may be a woman, instead of recognizing that the enemy looked a whole lot like Wall Street, instead of Main Street, and that we all have a great deal more in common with our brothers and sisters than we do that separates us.
Yeah, I listened to Van Jones last night, and you know, one of the things he said is, you know, what we've witnessed is a white lashing against a changing country, and you know, the people who have been left behind by the lack of educational opportunities, they're angry. And look, I stood in line for 5.5-6 hours on election day, and that was front and center. And I've talked to folks for, you know, the last 18 months. That's been front and center.
Yeah, and I think that's quite right. And I think that in many respects, Donald Trump was rather successful in characterizing Hillary Clinton as a member of a political and possibly social elite that was insensitive to the needs of working men and women and rural men and women and wage-earning men and women and salaried men and women in this country who are having to make serious choices between medicine and milk and between sugar and shoes, who are trying to get ahead and running hard just to stay in place. And he did that without recognizing or admitting to or revealing his own membership in that class without a touchstone for being in another place at another time in his life. So he was a bit of a Svengali in that regard. And we had to recognize as well and need to recognize that after 30 years of being bludgeoned by political enemies and the press, Hillary Clinton was uniquely damaged in her quest for public office. If we look at the last two presidential election cycles, what they have in common is that the ultimately prevailing party was the person who had no record in public life. And in Donald Trump's case, he took masterful, evasive steps to keep us from learning about any aspects of his public or quasi-public or private life. That's why we never saw tax returns.
Right.
That's why everything was debunked and everything was somebody else's fault. So There we were with an extraordinarily qualified candidate, maybe the most qualified candidate for the presidency of the United States in more than my lifetime, and who was damaged because of her record of public service, and another who had no record of public service, no background for this, no training, no evidence even that he had spent any time in his life before running for the presidency contemplating what the presidency is, what it is to administer a government, what it is to establish and envision public policy in a domestic sense, what it is to establish and envision and implement foreign policy in a, you know, in a real and meaningful sense, what it is to establish defense policy in a real and meaningful sense, and to contemplate it and think about it and think about it, its multi-tiered ramifications. And that's the person who wins, because that's the person who had nothing at that level that could be attacked. So we have a bit of a mess on our hands.
Yeah, we definitely have an interesting time ahead of us, because I talked to a number of people who really have no idea policy-wise where Trump will take us. But if you look to the Republican platform, which is where I have to say that he's going to probably pull a good bit of his numbers and of his ideas, you know, he talks about infrastructure, which I think we can agree we absolutely need something on infrastructure. But then you look at the Republican platform, which calls for a total repeal of the Davis-Bacon Law because, hey, we want to make sure that people work for poverty wages.
Well, it's exactly right. And there is no longer going to be a check or a balance simply because we are in this situation where the entirety of the government is in the hands of a really far out there elite of reactionary thinkers. They call themselves conservatives, but they're not conservatives any more than it would be proper to call me a liberal. But what they are is a microcosm of a very narrow strain of a very narrow slice of America that happens to be affiliated with the Republican Party, a slice that says we're going to get the government out of assuring that our tax dollars are utilized to be certain that people who work on government projects get paid the prevailing rate of wages for the work that they perform on taxpayer-funded projects. So we're going to deregulate that and get government off our backs on that, but then we're going to have the government in our bedrooms. And have the government telling us who will and who will not be permitted to have a baby and when, or to terminate a pregnancy to protect the mother's health. And they see no incongruity in those two extraordinarily incompatible kinds of concepts.
Right. But, you know, I look at this and you go back to the idea of the anger was about, in my view, was about, you know, jobs. It was about being able to support your family. It was about income. You know, because look, we've had stagnant wages for 40 years now. We've had deindustrialization for 30 years now. We've had all of these things, and people want that right. They want that work. They want that ability to support their families. And I look at what, you know, just from the Republican platform and what I can only assume is coming. You know, these are people who support the No Rights at Work agenda. These are people who are saying in their platform that we want to lower wages. In fact, on the Davis-Bacon issue, they said in the platform, we renew our call to repeal the Davis-Bacon Law, which limits employment and drives up construction costs and maintenance costs for the benefit of unions. They said that, and they also went on to say, although the unionization has never been permitted in any government agency concerned with national security, the current administration has reversed that, and the Transportation Security Administration is unionized. We will correct that mistake. Which, again, they're saying, look, we're going to take your rights away. This is what we've got coming.
Well, I don't think there's any question but that there is going to be a significant and sustained demand by the Paul Ryans of the United States Congress and the Mitch McConnells of the United States Senate and the Jeff Sessions of the U.S. Senate, who is so close to Donald Trump, and the Chris Christie's whose closest advisors were convicted in a criminal conspiracy just last week, will all be pushing for precisely those kinds of things. And the question gets to be, does Donald Trump of New York, an urbane piece of this character, go down this same road, or does he, in his remaking of the Republican Party of the United States of America, take a different tack and moderate the demands of this edge of the Republican Party, this far edge of the Republican Party of the United States? We have no way of guessing, much less knowing,
right,
because he has no public policy record.
Right.
He's been pro-abortion and he's been anti-abortion. He's been pro-union and indeed is a member of a union because of his television and media performance activities. He carries a card in the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. What does that mean? He lives in New York City. In New York City, there's a very different view of the role of government on the part of the people who live there than there is in, say, Schenectady, New York, which is his home state but not his hometown. And we need to see how that plays out in comparison to the motivations that are coming from a Jeff Sessions of Alabama, who has a very different view of government, certainly, than Donald Trump ought to have at this point, or a Mitch McConnell, who spent the last 8 years of his life committed to only one thing that we ever had clearly revealed to us, and that was to make Barack Obama's presidency fail. He should have been prosecuted for treason over that, but instead he was elevated to the majority status in the U.S. Senate on multiple occasions, to the likes of a Paul Ryan, who is a policy wonk that acts like a decent, nice guy, but who, again, has a view of the government that it should only be in our bedroom and in our children's lives and not in our working lives and not in protecting us from the avarice of banks and corporate America. So there's a lot we don't know. And unfortunately, the Fourth Estate, of which you are a member, brother, failed to crack the veneer of Donald Trump in his effort to keep at bay and obfuscate where he stands on anything. We know that he's going to build a wall. We know that he's going to repeal Obamacare, what he refers to as Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, but we haven't heard what's going to come in its place. So we don't know. Does that mean that he's going to do away with that part of the Affordable Care Act that assures that insurance companies may not refuse to write insurance on people with pre-existing medical conditions? Does it mean that we're going to have Donald Trump dictating that insurance companies are not going to be required to provide for women's health care coverage? Will it be permissible in the Donald Trump iteration of medical care for all that we only can get insurance protection from the private commercial insurance sector that operates for a profit and only when they say they want to write it? Does it mean that our children in our families who are over the age of 18 and under the age of 26 will no longer be entitled to coverage on their family's medical care policies? We just don't know. Because no one seriously explored these things. Told us he's going to build a wall and told us that the Mexicans are going to pay for it. He never told us about the ramifications of that wall.
Right.
He never told us about any number of these kinds of things. So,
what do you say to that
we're
person
in the
who
dark.
Says, what do you say to that
period.
Person who says that this was the ultimate protest vote? It didn't matter. Because I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who say, well, you know, I don't really care about the, you know, grab women by the private parts, and I don't really care about, you know, many of his statements. You know, I'm just angry. And this is, he's like the ultimate protest vote.
Well, if there was truly a protest vote, then there would have been a protest of the entirety of the Congress as well. But very few members of the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, and even fewer members of the Pennsylvania House and the Pennsylvania Senate, were taken out of office, were defeated. So there, what there was a protest of was insiders versus outsiders at the executive level, and that's as far as it went. Russ Feingold, an extraordinary former senator who tried to get his seat back in Wisconsin, was steamrolled over. Katie McGinty here in Pennsylvania, campaigning against among the most reactionary, anti-people, anti-worker senators in the United States Senate over the last 6 years, was defeated. Time after time, that wasn't a protest vote. I think that what we did see is a vote for somebody who is perceived to not be in the club, to be in control of one branch of the government in order to keep the members of the club in control of another branch of the government. And that's a very different notion than a protest vote.
Yeah, I mean, the talk of draining the swamp didn't really get drained. As I said earlier, it just got deeper and more deadly. So last question I've got for you then, you know, do you have any hope whatsoever that possibly Donald Trump, you know, moves in a direction that really is positive and really will help to rebuild the country and bring people together?
Obviously, I have hope. I couldn't do what I do and not have hope. And I also have a backstop. We do have a constitution. It is an organic document. We do live in a country that is governed by the rule of law, not the rule of men. Even if Donald Trump made a lot of noise about doing away with the First Amendment free speech rights and doing away with Fourth Amendment rights and doing away with so many of the Bill of Rights upon which we depend. So I have a great deal of hope in our system. I have a great deal of understanding that this system is about to get rocked and has been compromised in some ways. I also have a great deal of understanding that in a federal system such as ours, much of what we depend on happens at the state level. And here in Pennsylvania, we do have a bit of a backstop with Governor Wolf. We have a bit of a backstop with a statewide appellate judiciary that is significantly committed to upholding, protecting, and defending the laws of our Commonwealth. Yesterday, among the things that we did accomplish in Pennsylvania was an expansion of the mandatory retirement age for jurists from age 70 to age 75, and that passed in Pennsylvania, which means that some of the most wise and experienced legal minds will not be artificially or arbitrarily forced to leave the bench because they happen to have had a birthday, and I think that's a very positive thing. So, yes, I have hope, but like everything with every new leader, my hope is tempered by the reality of what I don't know. And understand that from the perspective of someone like me and from the perspective of all people who believe themselves to be part of a voice of workers. This has nothing to do with Democrats or Republicans. It has to do with people who are capable of understanding and advocating for and processing the hopes and needs and aspirations of working families and those who don't. I have my reservations about Donald Trump because he's never been in a working family. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have the capacity. That just means he doesn't have the experience.
And at the end of it, it's going to take us organizing and pushing and doing all the things that have to be done.
Well, there isn't any question about that, but the lesson this morning is whatever our need for unions was yesterday, it's greater today. And it's more significant today. And our job is to organize, educate, and agitate, and that job does not change because a Democrat is in the White House or a Republican is in the White House or a conservative is in the White House or a liberal is in the White House. That's our job. That's our duty. That's our role in life. And workers have a right and unions have an obligation to protect that right. Just that simple.
There you go. Erwin, I appreciate the time. Thanks for the thoughts. I'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Good to be here. Talk to you next week.
Great talking with you, our friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.